Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan, my pronouns are she, her.
My name is Joe, my pronouns are they, them.
And my name is Michael, my pronouns are he, his.
We are joined by our fearless leader this month.
Wild.
So fearless, exciting. Mostly fearless.
Mostly fearless.
Yeah.
Fearless in the normal times. Thanks for hanging with us.
Sure. Hey, it's a great pleasure. I've heard a lot about this awesome podcast. And I want to experience it firsthand. That's right.
Yeah, Hillary and I were talking about how we definitely recorded a few episodes before I think you knew anything about what was happening.
Sometimes Hillary, and Hillary, hello if you're listening. Sometimes Hillary exaggerates. I'm not sure that anything here happens without my complete
that's
knowledge.
True. Oh, that's fair.
No, I'm sure it does.
Now we just pull out the stories.
Now
no,
yes.
I don't want to know either.
Yeah. Bookstore gossip. But we're gonna talk today. It's the first episode of 2022, so we're gonna look back at our favorite books of the previous year, which is what we do every January. But first, let's talk about things that we've read recently, that we're currently reading, that we're excited to read. And I have a long list.
Of course you do.
Yours is color-coded.
Shockingly.
Color-coded.
It's color-coded. Yeah. Well, because some of them are books that I read for interviews, and then I read, when I'm going through a reading slump, I read romance because I can read it really, really quickly, and it tricks my brain into being like, oh, right, yeah, no, this is how we can read fast. And so at the beginning of the year, I like to read a bunch of romance novels so that I can, like, set myself up, and it's working so far. I've read, like, 12 books this year already, and nice. It's January, so we're doing okay.
Yeah, you know what I do for that? I just reread books that I've read many times in order to kind of reset, sort of a palate cleanser.
I see. I don't reread like ever.
It's very rare. It's usually if there's a new one in a series coming out, and mm-hmm. if I really liked the series,
yeah.
or a handful of.
Yeah. I don't remember mm-hmm. I reread. No, I didn't. I was gonna say I reread The Starless Sea before I chatted with Erin. I didn't.
Really?
No. Wow. I mean, I like flipped through it, but I did not sit down and read it. In full, I did go from, like, sometimes I'll do, if I read a physical copy and then I have the opportunity to listen to the audiobook, sometimes I'll do that. Like, I did that with The Night Circus.
Mm-hmm. But you interviewed her without rereading it first. That's like a high-wire act without a net, isn't it?
Yeah. Especially because I do always read the books. But I had my questions ahead of time. Like, I flipped through it enough that I was like, all right, I definitely want to touch on these things. But yeah, she at one point in the interview asked me something about my favorite something from The Night Circus, and I was like,
they were all my favorite.
Yeah, no, I definitely have a
so canned, hard to choose.
I have a canned answer for this, and please don't ask me to elaborate because I don't remember. Yeah, I very rarely will reread.
When I was a kid, when I was younger, and by younger I mean closer to your age, sorry. I would, like, every year I would reread Lord of the Rings.
Wow.
Every year, yeah, from like the time I was, I think from when I was like 12 until I was 30.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
That's, I've reread Little Women, not every year, but every few years.
Yeah. I mean,
Harry Potter, obviously.
I haven't even reread Alice since, like, college.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
You have some of the plot points tattooed on you.
I do. I have some of the key moments.
But what have you been reading?
But
I didn't mean to derail that.
Yeah, so all that's to say is that I've been reading a decent chunk of romance novels and a decent chunk of books for upcoming interviews and interviews that will be up by the time this goes up. So for romance novels, I read The X-Hex, which is like romance plus witches. Really fun. The Cheat Sheet by Sarah Adams had a sports twist on it. And then Love and Other Disasters by Anita Kelly.
Mm,
have you read this
no,
yet?
No, I have not read this. Do you have an arc of this? Or is it out?
I think we have. I think it's we have an audiobook of it. Okay. I think it's on Libro FM.
Okay.
I think I listened to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah.
It's good. So it's a romance novel where the two main characters are on the set of a cooking show, like a reality show. And they, you know, fall in love and it's very cute. But the reason, well, one of the reasons that it's great is that one of the romantic leads is non-binary. And that doesn't happen often in romance novels, which is great. It is a plot point. It is their plot point. The fact that they are non-binary is the point. But no, I mean, it's handled well. They're never, like, dead-named or anything. They're, like, it's nice. It's a good, I liked it. It was really good. And then I just read book 2 in the Dark Olympus series by Katie Roberts. So the first one's Neon Gods. I just finished Electric Idol, and then I just downloaded Wicked Beauty. I downloaded my arc of that so that I can talk about it with Elizabeth.
Yeah, I mean, this is all the romance people I know are talking about.
Yeah.
Like, I still can't, I still haven't ventured out.
Yeah, it's, if you like romance, it's great. If you're not a romance reader, there's nothing there for you. That's all it is.
You know what my stance on romance is. I don't read straight romances.
No, and they're
what
all
is
straight
your, what is your stance?
Queer romance.
I will only read queer romances. Like,
okay, I'm
really
sorry.
I won't.
Yeah.
You know, that's my age talking. I didn't, it, when you said straight romance, it can't just be like a
heterosexual.
Oh, that kind of, yeah.
And I mean, like,
isn't there one called Witch Please? Do you know that? Have you seen that title?
That's familiar.
I saw that title and I said, "Boy, that's my favorite." I have no idea what this book is about, but that's my favorite title.
It's a good title.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I do read a lot of queer romance, but all of the ones I just mentioned are, with the exception of Love and Other Disasters, are all heterosexual, or they're at least like the characters might be like bi or pan, but it is
a man and woman relationship, which is also good and important representation.
People like that too. But, so those are the romances that I, like, burned through in the first month of the year. But then some for interviews. I read the new Elizabeth George, Something to Hide, which was very good.
That took off. That just came out, right?
Yeah, that
took
just
off.
Came
it's,
out.
We sold almost our entire initial order the first
it's
week.
It's good. Well, she's returning to the Linley series. It's the 21st book in the Linley series, and, it took an interesting turn that I wasn't expecting. So instead of, you know, I don't know, it's a murder mystery. A cop, is in a coma and then dies, and they realize that in doing the autopsy that the cop had actually, you know, there was blunt force trauma. The cop had been murdered. While they're investigating that, they uncover this sort of like this secret practice, this secret, not so secret practice of various abuses of women happening within the Nigerian and Somali communities in London.
Huh.
And so that actually becomes a huge plot point that I was not expecting. But no, it's a great book. She's a fantastic writer.
Not to get off topic, but the whole idea of the police procedural, where do we stand on that now? I mean, it's sort of like, you know, the police as the police as heroes, you know, and everybody loves to read those.
It's,
but then you start thinking about how that fits in. It's a complicated topic.
I mean, I think Brooklyn Nine-Nine was super popular for a while, and then everybody, it got, like, a little weird, because everybody's like, we love these characters,
but we don't really want to.
Which obviously is TV.
Yeah.
With books, it's difficult. One of the funniest things about that whole argument online, though, is that, you know, they started to say, well, let's not read police procedurals anymore. They're just inherently corrupt, et cetera. But then they started going for Paw Patrol. They said, no, we got to leave Chase out of this. Chase is fine.
Chase alone!
Do not try to cancel Paw Patrol. We're not going to allow it.
Chase is fine. My daughter is literally at home pretending to be a puppy named Chase today. Yeah, so,
I just thought that was so funny. Sometimes these online arguments just go on and on.
They
They're
spiral.
Never resolved, and they spiral or de-spiral or whatever.
They spiral.
Yeah.
I will say, you know, this... this was not a book I would normally pick up and read. I like mysteries, but I don't usually jump into a series 21 books in without having read anything else. But because she was on the podcast, I read this one, and it's a British police procedural. It honestly, I kind of felt like it focused more on the characters who weren't cops. And so I didn't have that kind of, like, I'm rooting for the cops, because it was more like, I'm rooting for these Nigerian women to, like, get out of this situation. And, like, it was more for me about that, so. Yeah,
I mean, I love the ton of French novels. I think they're all just great. She's a great writer.
Yeah. And I've read the first one. I haven't read all of them.
Yeah.
Same. I know. Okay.
Did you like, if you like Donna Tartt, The Secret History, you should...
Oh my gosh, really?
Ryan, you're making these confessions on a public podcast.
No, I have said before that I don't often read the bestsellers because I don't have to.
Yeah, anyway, but it's about these too smart for their own good college kids who get themselves in trouble and there's murder involved. And Tana French's second book, The Likeness, is kind of like that.
Okay. I really liked the first one that I read, so I would probably go back and read more of hers. So my interview with Elizabeth George, that's up now, and I gotta say, like, wow, like, sometimes you can just tell you're talking to a legend. Like, I started chatting with her and I was like, oh, you're just on a different level than the like, you could just straight up teach a master class, and maybe you have, I don't know. You're different. You're built different. Yeah. And you can hear it in the interview, in her very thoughtful responses. And, like, you know, we had a very organic conversation and I got some laughs out of her and stuff like that. But the way she just very thoughtfully would pause and think about her answer and then say these things that you're like, that just came out of your brain. You just talk like that. Yeah. That's just your day to day, you know, because sometimes with author interviews, they'll send me sort of not softball questions, but they'll be like, the author will be prepared to talk about these things, and they didn't do that with Elizabeth George, so she didn't know.
She was prepared to talk about
everything and anything. She was lovely. So that interview's up. I also interviewed Lisa Gardner, who is a New Hampshire mystery thriller writer, about her book One Step Too Far, which I loved. That interview will be up by the time this comes out. That interview will be up. That book is really, that's a fun, if you like mystery thrillers, it is set in the wilderness. And it's one of those types of things where, like, the danger could easily be nature or a human. Like, it could go either way, because they are, it's this group of people who are, they do a yearly search for this guy who went missing 5 years ago. And Frankie, the main character of this series, she sort of just, like, travels the U.S. and she is really good at, like, finding missing people. It's usually cold cases, they know that they're looking for a body, and she is able to go in and kind of just find these people because, you know, she's a stranger and she doesn't feel awkward about asking friends and family and neighbors these questions that maybe the other people would be like, well, I don't want to accuse my neighbor of blah blah blah, and she's like, I'm a stranger, I don't care, what do you got? Like, she's very spunky, like, she's very funny. She reads about this case, and she's like, I'm going to find that guy. So she joins this search party, and they hike into this national park, and it's going to be like a 5-day hike, and things go awry really quickly. It's very, very good.
So when you said wilderness, not New Hampshire.
Not New Hampshire. It's Washington, maybe? It's
out west.
Yeah. In very scary wilderness.
I would love to get her for an event here at the store. Yes, you know, she's New Hampshire.
A moment at the end. I only had 15 minutes with her. She had a very hard out at the end of the interview, but we did have a moment where I was like, oh yeah, and like, we're also in New Hampshire. Oh, we're neighbors. Ah, ha, ha, oh, cool. And I did follow up with my contact and be like, if she's ever doing more. Yeah. So we'll see, you know.
It's complicated because we're not doing in person right now. So I mean,
yeah, it's a little
everybody's
harder.
Everybody's your local bookstore online.
Right.
You know, yep. You could have been calling from Washington State.
Exactly, right? Yeah. No, but she was very nice. She was, we had a really good laugh about, you know, she had taken, like, survivalist classes before writing this. And she said by the end of the class they wouldn't give her a knife. Like, they wouldn't let her have a knife. Nice. It's like, I feel you. But I like what I like about this series in particular is that Frankie, like, she's not an ex-cop, she's not ex-military, like, she has no background in this. She's just really good at finding people, and it really pulls into that, like, the everyday people solving cases. It's
a Miss Marple.
Yeah, it's a little bit of like the people on TikTok figuring things out.
I love Agatha Christie. I read so many Agatha Christie novels.
Yes.
Well, there's so many to read.
Exactly. There's never.
It's like the Jimi Hendrix of detectives. You know, there's always more in the vault.
There's always more.
Absolutely.
So I do recommend, if you want a little bit of a mystery thriller, One Step Too Far did just come out, and then two more that I am reading currently for interviews. I just started Cherish Farah, which is the new Bethany C. Morrow book that's coming out this year. It's coming out next month, I think, and I'll be
February 8th.
Yeah, I'll be interviewing her February 9th.
Oh wow!
So I'm excited for that. And then I just started listening to Black Leopard, Red Wolf by Marlon James.
I need to listen to read it. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I am in the process of scheduling my interview with him for the sequel, which I'm very excited for. I like Marlon James a lot, so that will be fun. And then I read a couple others that were neither romance nor for interviews.
Wow, you still had some time.
With all that, I read an awesome novella that is coming out this year. It's called And Then I Woke Up by Malcolm Devlin. And this book, I mean, I read it in one sitting, and I put it down and just kind of stared at the wall for a while because it's about a zombie apocalypse, and as you're reading it, it's basically the narrator. You can tell he's in some sort of therapy. He's, like, talking to group, and he's, like, telling the story of his experience. You know, he's like, the world ended on a Saturday, and he, like, describes, you know, people crashing into the restaurant, people turning, and all this bloodshed.
Fun.
It's great.
I mean, the cover is wild.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Except, maybe there weren't actually zombies? Oops!
Well, I've always thought of zombie stories as, you know, people just sort of projecting their wish to, like, you know, do violence to their neighbors.
And that's kind of what this is. It's a novella of perception. What is the truth? Who are the bad guys?
Yeah.
It is very much a, you know, not so subtly veiled look at the world today. It is fantastic. It's a fantastic novella. And just had me just wrapped.
What's the title again?
And Then I Woke Up.
And Then I Woke Up.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out
later this year. Let's see. It comes out in April 12th. It rocked my brain. Like,
one of those ones on my pile on my coffee table at the moment.
Yeah. And it's a quick read. And then another very quick read. I read Ain't Burned All the Bright by Jason Reynolds and Jason Griffin.
That one's really good.
So good.
That was, yeah.
I mean, it's a slam poem that is, what, like three sentences, basically? Three really long sentences, but it's illustrated.
It's very collage.
Yes, it's like moleskin pages that have been, like collage and paint and things, and it's 300 pages long, and it's a slam poem about a family at home in 2020. during the pandemic. Yeah. And it's raw and heartbreaking and beautiful and frustrating. And, you know, you finish it and you've got all these emotions. And
it's definitely, like, it's a one-sitting book. Like, oh, it's very easy to read in one sitting. And
I read it in, like, intense, 40 minutes, and I read it out loud to myself.
Yeah, I think I read it, like, mostly on break one day here.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what's the... Yeah, somebody spends like a year, 2 years writing a book, and then we just like polish them off in like an hour or a day.
But it
or
had
something.
An impact on both of us.
No, I know. But what's that? I've often wondered how writers feel about that.
Yeah. I will say, when I have told writers I read your book in one sitting, they're like hugely flattered.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, you couldn't put it down, right? And
well, they used to say that's how you should read Dostoevsky. Seriously, you know, you just have like a bottle of like vodka right out of the freezer, and you're supposed to sit in a chair and just stay up all night and read Crime and Punishment.
Wow!
And the bottle's supposed to be empty at the end.
Yeah, that sounds healthy.
Well,
a choice.
It's not a health regimen. No.
Okay, it's not that I'm going to call out of work and be like, so Michael told me to do this thing.
Just tell him Dostoevsky. Yeah.
Just tell Michael I was reading Dostoevsky.
Hey, you'd get a pass. If that was your reason for calling out, I promise you, I'm raising my right hand. You'd get a pass.
That's hilarious. But yeah, no, I really loved that one. And then I just finished, I read My Sister the Serial Killer by Oyinkin Braithwaite. We did that with the Jack of All Graves Book Club, which is our buddy podcast. We all loved it. And the next book is Mexican Gothic.
Oh,
I know.
I haven't gotten to that yet. I'm really looking
forward to that. It's really good. And she just dropped the cover for her next book, which is called The Daughter of Dr. Moreau. Mm. I was like, that's a great title.
Oh, my God.
I know. Nice. I'm very excited. It's a great cover, too. So all lots of very good things. But I'll pause there. Joe, what have you been reading?
I can go. So I've been reading a few different things. I'm not going to talk about it a lot because most people aren't going to need this recommendation, but The Once and Future Witches by Alex E. Harrow.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So good, right?
Why? Yeah. I do wish somebody had said the phrase, like, lesbian suffragette librarian to me.
Okay,
like,
fair. Yeah.
It doesn't really fit on a business card, but, you know.
I love it.
Yeah.
It was so good about libraries and archives and, like, keeping, like, memory creation and maintaining, you know, knowledge throughout generations. It's fascinating and really good, and I really recommend it to everyone. It was so good.
One of my favorite things to come from that is that Alex wrote in that women, their dresses used to have pockets so that the witches could keep all their, like, accoutrements on them, and that, you know, men were afraid of witches, and so they got rid of pockets. And she made this up for the book, and the internet thought it was a fact. And so you'll see every once in a while floating around on Twitter that, like, this, like, quote from the book, and they're like, oh my gosh, today I learned. And she's like, I made it up. It's not true.
Shouldn't it be true, though?
That's true. The thing is, it feels very true.
I mean, it's a metaphor. Absolutely.
It is. Well, her whole book is
fear of women's agency.
Yeah, and her whole book is exactly that. It's a metaphor. It's a feminist reimagining of the suffrage movement with witches.
Yeah.
And it's good.
It's really good.
And it has, like, this whole Arthurian thing. Like, I obviously, true, from the title, I should have expected that, but, like, I didn't. I was like, wait, okay, yeah, that seems obvious now, but, like, I didn't see that coming. But yeah, gorgeous book. Yeah. I loved that. I just finished Interior Chinatown by Charles Yu, which we're doing for the book club in February, the first Monday in February.
February 7th?
Whatever the first Monday is.
Yeah, I genuinely have no idea.
I'm pretty sure it's the 7th.
coming up.
Yeah, it's coming up. It's a wild book. It's very, I have not read another book like it. Mm. It's written like a screenplay.
Okay.
And it is about a man who wants to be an actor. He is Asian and he is cast as generic Asian man in mm-hmm. a cop procedural, and then starts to have opportunities to, like, he wants to be Kung Fu guy. This is all the language of it is very much talking about or referencing the way we talk about specifically minority people and how we create these caricatures, and these are mm-hmm. the only boxes in which people are put mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. it's really weird and interesting, and like it, there are multiple times where I was reading and I'm like, okay, I'm sorry, are they actually on a TV show, or is this is this his life, or are they filming a TV show? Is he filming a TV show? Is that what's happening right now? I'm not sure.
Cool. Okay.
It's interesting, and like it has some really, at the end, some really good like just paragraph long sections or just talking about the experience of marginalization in America and in Hollywood particularly, and the way that it causes people to struggle with their own identity because mm-hmm. of the way we push identities on people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting. I don't feel like I have done a great job explaining it because it's a weird book.
You sold me. I'm intrigued.
It won the National Book Award. Yeah, it is a fast read. Yeah. So like definitely if it's interesting to you, it's worth checking out. I just finished, I don't know if I should say it mantelpieces or mantel pieces, because because it's obviously, it's a pun, it's Hilary Mantel's collection of essays from the London Review of Books.
Oh, fun.
I started this in November of 2020.
Oh, I just finished it.
Because it's a book of essays, like, you don't have to read, like, I'm not waiting for the next plot in it.
Right.
It's really good. It has a lot of really good explorations of early modern English history, which is, you know, why I like Hilary Mantel, is because if people aren't aware, she's the one who wrote Wolf Hall and mm-hmm. that series, and won the Booker twice.
What a great series.
Sometimes I have had coworkers find me just wandering through the store and are like, Joe, what are you looking for? And I'm like, a book that will make me feel like Wolf Hall did the first time I read it. Like, I just want Wolf Hall again, but for the first time, could we?
Aww.
No? Okay. Fine. I love those. All three of those books are phenomenal.
What a skill just to be able to put yourself into the mind of somebody so distinctive, like, five centuries ago or whatever.
And she's such a good historian, too. Mm-hmm. Like, she just does... Because I find it very hard to read books about actual people, like historical fiction that's about Henry VIII or Thomas Cromwell, like very specific people who existed and did things, and not feel like, okay, why are, seems weird that you're making Anne Boleyn feel this way or say this, like, are you, and I just feel like she did such good research. She just really did embody the characters really well. And in this collection of essays, my favorite essay is Royal Bodies, which is one people may have heard of because it was in 2013, and it was Royal Bodies from Anne Boleyn to Kate Middleton, and she was talking about the way we perceive and interact with the monarchy. There's a point where she talks about how she used to be like, what... Should we have a monarchy? Shouldn't we have a monarchy? And she said, it's like asking if we should have pandas. We just keep them in a cage. We look at them all the time. They reproduce. We're like, oh, cool, good job. And like, that's so it. Good. And they're like, they're not people. We don't treat them as people. Yeah. And they don't have lives. And like, what does this mean? What are we doing to these people? And why... Why are we talking about, and it was because it was 2013, why are we talking about Kate Middleton the way we do?
Yeah.
And I think you can definitely extrapolate to Meghan Markle
mm-hmm.
and how so much of it is tied into bodies and embodiment, and like I find that fascinating. I love royalty embodiment. There's a text, The King's Two Bodies, about medieval understanding of king's bodies. It's fascinating. This is like my really weird niche thing. I really like
the Great Chain of Being kind of stuff.
I can't explain this really theoretical thing, but about how kings have two bodies. They have their body not natural and their body politic, and the body natural can die without the body politic dying.
Yeah,
they
are the state.
They are the state. It's fascinating. Yeah. But I think the one line that is just absolutely devastating in this, we don't cut off the heads of royal ladies these days, but we do sacrifice them. And we did memorably drive one to destruction a scant generation ago.
Yup. Yep.
And yep. So I think it, tying into monarchy, but also into fame and the way we talk and engage with fame and celebrities, it's really interesting. And then other two, I'll go quickly on these. The Dead in the Dark by Courtney Gould, a YA horror girl who her dads are TV ghost hunters.
Okay.
And they have gone, one of them has gone back to their hometown to scout for the show, and he's been there for 6 months. And she's like, I don't know a lot about TV, but this seems weird. And so then she and her other dad go up to stay with him, and they like stay in a motel up there. And she doesn't know like anything about her dad's past, and starts like getting more information, and it's just weird. And weird things are happening. Kids keep disappearing. Huh. And a lot of people think her dad is involved because they started disappearing right when he got to town.
Ruh-roh.
And all of the weather is weird.
Uh-oh.
It's not good. And she befriends, like, the popular girl in town who's seeing things.
Oh, good.
And I am 75% of the way through this audiobook. I have no idea what's going to happen.
Like, that's exciting.
It's,
I love that.
Wild. I'm like, I think someone's dead. Is it this character or this character? I don't know. One of these characters is probably a ghost, maybe. I don't know. I enjoyed that one. And then the thing I'm currently reading, Young Mungo by Douglas Stewart, who wrote Shuggie Bane.
Oh, okay.
He won, the Booker in 2020.
Is it M-O-N-G-O?
M-U-N-G-O.
Oh, that's too bad. My brother's nickname in high school was Mongo.
So, if you've read Shuggie Bane, it will sound very similar in terms of queer coming of age Glasgow in the 80s, 90s. I don't think it says specifically, but it is heartbreaking and devastating. Like, if you've read Shuggie Bane, like, you know what you're getting with this. It's about Mungo, a young 15-year-old boy meets another boy who keeps pigeons in their council flats in the in Glasgow, and they start to bond. And there, I will say, it definitely has a more hopeful or nice note than like Shuggie Bane. There is really nothing nice that happens to that character. This one, it's like, okay, he's getting a first love, it's gonna be nice, but I don't think it's gonna end well. And
yeah,
so I'm taking that one very slow, but it's good so far. And it comes out in April, May.
It comes out later this year.
But you know, trigger warnings for alcoholism, absentee parents, abuse, things like all of
that stuff.
So that's what I've been reading.
Nice. Michael, have you been reading anything recently
coming up? Well, a little bit. Before I say what I've been reading, let me just say a couple of words about Jeff Haight.
Oh yeah.
Jeff was a great friend. He passed away a few days ago. Jeff was the owner of Gibson's from 1977 to 1994. And he was 82 years old and had been struggling with cancer, And he passed away a few days ago, and we really miss him. He was a great friend and a great book lover. And I just went to the shelf today, and I was looking at a book, and it was, you know, intellectual history, cultural history. I said, boy, I bet Jeff would like, oh, shoot.
Aww.
You know, so yeah. Anyway, we miss Jeff. Wanted to say that. As to what I've been reading, I just finished City on Fire by Don Winslow, which is actually coming out as an Independent Bookstore Day exclusive for Indies, a signed edition, I think, for Independent Bookstore Day in April. And that is in April.
Yeah, yes. It's like the first or last Saturday.
I think it's the last Saturday.
I think it's the last Saturday. It always is.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's funny. This book is literally a retelling of the Iliad set in 1980s Rhode Island. In a mob war between Irish and Italian mobsters.
That's amazing.
And I, you know, I mean, I went back and forth. I read it. It's a compulsively good read, but I went back and forth between thinking, boy, that's ridiculous, and then thinking, wow, what's going to happen next? what's going to happen? You know, and I, you know, it was one of those books that you read in like a day or two, and it was really good, but, you know, I mean, people have used Homer as the template for their novels before, and sometimes they're literary.
Right, yeah.
Like Ulysses, yep. You know. This is not Ulysses. This is called City on Fire.
That's probably good.
I love Ulysses. There's actually, I've read it many times. I don't want to go into that.
Have you read The Paris Bookseller?
I have not.
You should.
Yeah.
It just came out. It's about Sylvia Beach.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's that. Yeah,
it's
I thought that was the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do want to read that.
Yeah.
There's actually a new illustrated edition of Ulysses out from Other Press. That's beautiful.
Mm.
Distributed by our friends at Random House.
Oh.
But anyway, City on Fire, Don Winslow, amazingly good read.
Nice.
You know, tricky premise to pull off, but I think he does, and it's coming out, I think, in April, and. Another book I read is by a fellow bookstore owner, Emma Straub, who owns Books Are Magic in Brooklyn. And the way she sent a personal note to when she sent out ARCs on this. And the note was, this is a book that I hope that if somebody comes into your bookstore and says, give me something that's really fun and not stupid.
I say,
huh, an interesting challenge accepted. And she pulls it off. It's a time travel novel set in New York.
Huh.
It's called This Time Tomorrow, and it's about the relationship between a young woman and her father. Really,
okay.
It's very touching and really very entertaining. You know, it's got elements of Time and Again by Jack Finney, and a little bit of Narnia in there. There's a little place you can go where magical things happen.
Fun.
Yeah, it was really a fun read. I took it on vacation. That is a great vacation read, let me tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody gets a vacation this year, they should take this book.
And boy, we hope you get a vacation this year.
I hope everybody gets a vacation.
Everybody deserves one.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I've had a hard time focusing on reading. As we went on and on the pandemic, I had a hard time reading fiction. And fiction is really just, you know, do the kids still say, it's my jam? Do they still say that?
Yeah, sure.
No, but you can
so
say
so far
it.
As you know, Michael, they still say that. Anyway, I just had a hard time focusing. Instead, I would read, like, articles in The New Yorker or The Atlantic, or I'd watch Netflix.
Yeah.
I couldn't focus on fiction. In fact, the only things I was really able to focus on in 2021 were things that were like really vivid new voices who had like really interesting stories to tell and just a unique way of telling it. I couldn't read anything that was that reminded me of other stuff, to be honest.
Yeah.
I pulled out this quote from Drive Your Plow Over the Bones of the Dead, which is my favorite title of all time.
I love a long title.
Yes.
Yeah.
No weird title.
And that one's from William Blake, you know, because it's about a Blake scholar. But so early on in the novel, a corpse is discovered. Mm-hmm. And only his right index finger refused to submit to the traditional pose of politely clasped hands, but pointed upward as if to catch our attention and put a brief stop to our nervous, hurried efforts. Now pay attention, said the finger. Now pay attention, there's something you're not seeing here. The crucial starting point of a process that's hidden from you, but that's worthy of the highest attention. And that to me was like what I was looking for in fiction in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Something you haven't seen yet, but it's there. You should notice it. It's worthy of the highest attention, and you're going to want to look into that.
Hmm.
It's just that kind of tingly feeling,
mm-hmm.
you know, that you get when you know you're in really good hands with a writer,
mm-hmm.
and you want to keep going. And it's like this sense of discovery and excitement, you know, and it's not about the plot.
Yeah.
It's about something ineffable in the book.
Yeah.
It's a mystery, not a plot mystery, but more like a deeper mystery to be solved, an aesthetic mystery, a mystery about existence.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was looking for. I didn't always find it. But I found it in a few places.
Now you're going to share
it. And now you're going to hear about it. As Frank Costanza would say, and now you're going to hear about it. No One Is Talking About This by Patricia Lockwood is like, you know, the perfect novel of our internet moment. Right, yeah. Joe? You read
that. Yeah, it's intense. Like, there were a few times where I was, because I listened to it as an audiobook, where I was walking around school or whatever and was like, oh, hold on, wait a second, I need to actually focus. This is a lot.
Golly, I don't think I could do it. I'd have to sit quietly and read it without any interruptions. I couldn't walk around listening to it.
Yeah, it was definitely, it was a choice I made. I don't know. It was a great choice, but it was.
Whether or not it was the right one.
Well, sometimes you got things to do.
Yeah, it was how I was going to be able to read it, so.
Yeah, but it's about our life in the internet and how, you know, what's real life, what's online life, and the two just bleed into each other. And what happens when a real crisis, you know, derails our normal way of doing things, whether it's on the internet or in life. You know, I just thought it was such a powerful book as a debut novel. I mean, she wrote a memoir called Priest Daddy a few years
ago.
But this was her first novel.
Yeah. And I didn't realize that.
It's amazing. Just full of these things that make you stop and say, you know, not a quick read. Or if you're listening to it on audio, stop and say.
It's when you got to pause a lot.
Yeah, when you have to be like, okay, I can't do this while I'm eating a sandwich between classes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I read a few debuts last year that were really exciting for me. One was Animal by Lisa Tadeo.
I love Lisa Tadeo so much.
From Three Women?
Yeah.
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 That was nonfiction.
Because I got to meet her. It wasn't a conference, but it was like a meet and greet type thing.
About the books, one of those?
Maybe? Yeah. I don't even remember. It was down in Boston, and it was like a cocktail hour. Yeah.
Well, maybe. Maybe it was one of the publishers.
I think it was a publisher event.
Simon and Schuster.
Because Helen Phillips was there for The Need, and Lisa mm-hmm. Tadeo was there for Three Women, and there were a few other authors. And I tried to read as many of the books ahead of time as I could, and oh my God, Three Women just bowled me over.
Yeah.
She's very a fantastic intense. Writer.
She's got a gift.
Yeah.
She really does. And it translates to fiction that doesn't always happen.
No. Yeah.
Sometimes
no, I'm
people
really
are
glad
either
to hear
nonfiction,
that.
They're in mm-hmm. this box or they're in the fiction box.
Right.
But she's just a vivid writer, whatever she's doing. And
yeah.
She really gets how to do fiction. I mean, with nonfiction, sometimes you're telling, you know, then this, then this, then this, then this.
Right.
But in fiction, there's more of a sense of indirection. You approach it crabwise, you know, sideways.
Yeah.
And she's able to do it. She's able to do it all. And Animal was a debut novel, another debut.
Yeah.
I was, you know, very, very, very high on that novel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, it's just got all the sense of danger that I like to find.
Yeah.
Not in real life, just in
fiction. Yeah, I would also.
That's right. Here at the bookstore, we're all about danger. Come on down.
This is another book that I was listening to an audiobook while eating a sandwich.
Oh my God.
On break, and it was a lot. So
the common
definitely
theme
check
seems
some
to be sandwiches.
Yeah. So check some trigger them. Warnings for that one for sure.
Oh, it's the whole.
It is
it's
very
nothing
intense.
But trigger warnings.
Yeah.
There's nothing in it that isn't
intense.
A trigger warning.
Yeah. It's a very intense book.
It sure is, yeah. And then there was one called Night Bitch that. Her last name is Yoder. I'm trying to remember her first name, but anyway, it's about the experience of a young mother who's got a baby at home and her husband's kind of inattentive and not really there, you know, which is like the experience of almost every young mother. What is it? Rachel?
Rachel Yoder.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to say Rachel, but I wasn't sure. But anyway, so she suddenly starts thinking, as one does, that she's turning into a dog. Natural. Yeah, this is just the natural Typical. Progression. Yeah, but, you know, so she's, like, bewildered by this metamorphosis, and she just, she tries to figure out what's happening. And the whole book is about her adventures, like, bonding with other women and trying to figure out what's happening. And it felt like, you know, just sort of, as we used to say with sports, it's a metaphor for life. You know, but again, a very intense read, a debut, again, a new voice. And just all these, it just gives you hope for the future. You have all these vivid novels coming out that are just so highly textured and interesting and just got a sense of mystery. And, you know, you're always chasing this feeling. You want that experience as a reader. You need that experience. I'm going to pull out another quote. Hang on. This is from the afterword to Lolita, where Nabokov talks about the kinds of books he likes to read. For me, a work of fiction exists only insofar as it affords me what I shall bluntly call aesthetic bliss. That is, a state of being somehow, somewhere connected with other states of being where art, curiosity, tenderness, kindness, ecstasy is the norm. There are not many such books. And he goes on to trash some of his contemporaries. Not by name, but you know who he's talking about. But anyway, I mean, yeah. Aesthetic bliss.
Yeah.
You know, that tingle you feel, it's either in your back of your neck or maybe it's lower down on your spine, but it's somewhere where you just say, oh, wow,
yeah,
this is that feeling again. Mm. I really love this feeling. I've missed it. Yeah. Now I'm getting it again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice to have the pandemic brain fog clear long enough to...
It's been a struggle.
To hit that. Yeah. No, such for sure.
People are reporting it. All of booksellers all over the country have reported that they haven't been able to really read that much.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we're exhausted.
Mm-hmm. And as soon as anything else happens in your life, that's the thing for me. Like, as soon as school started, I was like, oh, well, no more books, I guess. Yeah. No more fun.
Well, you have to read for business.
Yes. Very, you know, thrilling. If anyone needs any recommendations about how to information services for reference librarians,
how about advanced shushing? Yes. I'm glad you laughed. My wife wouldn't have laughed. She's a library director. She would have smacked me.
Yeah.
Yeah, but reading for grad school is, I mean, it just sucks all the energy out of your reading life, I think. I did that for a very short period. I quit grad school. I didn't keep going.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
Is my first degree that isn't an English degree, so I'm like, I have to read text books. I'm not sure.
No, thank you. Yeah, no, there's a reason I only book interviews with people whose books I like, because I'm gonna read their book before the interview, so it better be something I can actually get through.
What if you didn't? What would be your approach?
If I didn't read the book ahead of time?
No, if you didn't like it.
Oh, if I didn't like it.
Interview's canceled.
Maybe I direct just start off with, so your book wasn't good.
So I hated it.
Tell me why your book could have gone in a different direction, but it went in this sucky direction.
Yeah, what happened? Made you choose?
What was your process to choose to write such a bad book?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, go.
Yeah, I don't know what
I'm glad that hasn't happened.
No, I'm very picky about my interviews. I'm very picky about who I book.
I feel honored.
Yeah. As you should. But you read a book, one of your favorite books of the year, and we talked about this on the last episode because
we have a bone to pick with you.
Sort of. So I have to tell you the full story because I had a customer come in and he was looking for certain types of books. And I said, oh, okay, well, this was one of Michael's favorite books of the year. This kind of fits the bill of what you're looking for.
Hang on, was it fiction?
Yeah.
Was it Louise Erdrich?
Yeah.
Why are you attacking Louise Erdrich?
We're not attacking you.
We're attacking you for not telling us what this book was actually about.
It's about a haunted bookstore.
Yeah, are you kidding me, Michael? You handed that arc to me and didn't say those words to me. And I cannot ever forgive you for that.
Did I hand that arc to you?
You literally did. Do you not remember this? I picked it up and was holding it in my arms and you were like... We have an arc for the new Louise Erdrich. And I was like, yes, do you want it first?
And I said.
And you said, yes. And you took it.
Of course I did.
And you read it, and then you handed it back to me and said, it's good. It's been sitting at my house for months because
You haven't read it yet?
No!
It's about a haunted bookstore.
I bought it.
Why didn't you tell me that?
Not only that, but it's the bookstore's most annoying customer. Now, we don't have annoying customers.
You.
I just want to stipulate.
Yeah.
We love our customers.
We have never been annoyed.
No, mostly with each other.
It was so funny.
Yeah.
Like, reading the flap of this book and having this realization, wait, this is what it's about. And it was so funny because I made a TikTok about it, about how I had no idea because I don't read bestsellers because they're selling on their own and I'm reading books that need
Louise
help.
Louise Erdrich, it's not just a bestseller. Okay, go on.
Right. But I don't often pick up ones that I know I don't need to hand sell this. It's already selling.
Okay.
I'm going to read these like books that need a leg up, right?
Every
the amount of booksellers and librarians who went, wait, that's what that book's about? No one knows what this book is about.
Because everybody's just like, oh, it's Louise Erdrich.
It's going to sell.
She's one of the best writers in the country.
So obviously it's going to be great. It's going to be literary. And it's going to sell.
It's not only a ghost story. It's a story about Native Americans.
Yes.
It's a story about the struggle of indigenous people in this country. It's a story about 2020.
Yep. Yes.
About the murder of George Floyd and COVID.
Yes.
It's about now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's also, really entertaining with just the quirky characters you come to expect from her and just the great storylines. I mean, it was my favorite novel of the year. I really, I was also into those new voices that I described earlier, but Louise Erdrich is, to me, just the best that's working right now.
Yeah.
I don't know who else is working right. I guess Cormac McCarthy is still here, but I haven't seen anything new from him for a while. But Louise Erdrich, golly, she's funnier than you expect. She writes about all these serious topics.
And that's the thing I think I didn't expect.
With such humor.
Yeah. Is I don't know, I was like, oh yeah, it's literary fiction and cool, like we love Louise Erdrich, that's great, and then actually reading the flap and I was like, I beg all of your pardons, why was this not like the blurb sent out to everyone who works
haunted bookstore?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Not only that, it's her bookstore,
right? I bought it. Yeah. I was like, I have to read this book because what? Oh my god, it was so, but yeah, the amount of fellow booksellers and librarians who were like, I had no idea that's what that was about. Like, no one said anything. People were like, I love this book. This is my favorite book of the year. And they would stop there.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
I don't know what it is about this book that no one wants to summarize that it's about a haunted bookstore.
Anyway. Very good.
Hilarious.
It's a good book. We'll just leave it there.
We'll just leave it there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that just... cracked me up. And
I think it's going
to
have a great life in paperback because people are just slowly realizing what it is.
Yeah,
it's
going to
be like every book club in the country, and all the booksellers
awesome book
hand selling it in paperback. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whenever that happens.
Yep. I know. Yeah. No, that'll be great.
Yeah.
Joe, I know you and I both have huge lists of
books that I know I've talked about on here, so I don't want to spend like too much time rehashing books you've all heard me talk about over and over and over again. So I can give some like rapid fire ones and then a couple that I know I haven't talked about on the podcast that I really like. In terms of just some rapid fire, The Prophets by Robert Jones Jr., one of the best books I've ever read, honestly. Queer enslaved men. It's devastating and gorgeous and it's an incredible book. Great Circle by Maggie Shipstead. Again, just so well written. Matrix by Lauren Groff. I had never read Lauren Groff before this, and then I was like, oh, it's
she was
lesbian
here.
Nuns in the medieval nuns. Like, okay, I will read any queer historical fiction set in medieval or early modern.
Yes,
like that's my thing. I love it.
That was a good book. Yeah,
it was a really, really good book. A few like fantasy. Marvelous Light, everybody's heard me talk about that. The Chosen and the Beautiful by Nevo, yes. If you haven't read that, gorgeous retelling of Gatsby, just like really good fantasy. Like, yeah. She Who Became the Sun by Shelley Parker Chan. A couple of YA, Aristotle and Dante, Dive into the Waters of the World, and Last Night at the Telegraph Club. Both queer coming of age. Aristotle and Dante is set in the 80s. Last Night in the Telegraph Club was in the 50s in San Francisco. Light from Uncommon Stars, a queer found family, very Star Trek, adorable.
Very Star Trek.
Very, like, it has a lot of references to Star Trek. Like, it makes the people who read it who love Star Trek, particularly The Next Generation, just, like, melt at the references. It's just, like, really warm and soft, and I love it.
What's that title again?
Light from Uncommon Stars by Rika Aoki.
Yeah, because I watched Star Trek The Next Generation in real time. Unlike you whippersnappers.
Yeah, you weren't watching it on Netflix.
In fact, I was watching it when one of my kids was born. When Claire was born, we were at the hospital and we had to induce labor, and we actually made the doctor. The doctor said, "Well, you want me to come now or like a couple hours from now?" And we said, "Come in a couple hours. We want to watch Star Trek: The Next Generation, and then you can come in." And so
that's awesome.
That's the story of
it's a super sweet one. If you have any like queer Star Trek fans in your life, like buy them this book, they'll love it. Filthy Animals by Brandon Taylor. I know I've talked about him a bunch on the podcast. I'll reiterate, like, he is probably the author I'm most excited about currently writing. Like, he's gorgeous, complicated books about queer black men. Filthy Animals is a collection of short stories that came out this year. His other book, Real Life, was came out in 2020. That was his debut. Just, like, I will read anything that he writes.
That's awesome.
He's so good, and so good at capturing, I don't know, I always say he makes me feel, his books make me feel more human than I do most of the time. Like, he just reminds me of, like, I don't know, they're very grounding. I really love his books.
Just stop and breathe for a second and just be back inside
yourself. Like, yeah. It's just like a really, like, okay, yeah. I am not the only person who's felt these things. I am not the only. We're all here and we're all working on it.
That's another valuable experience as a reader when you find a writer that can do that for you. Again, it's like a feeling that you chase.
Yeah.
And when you get it, it's great.
Yeah. So I just, anything he writes, I will read. And then the three I really want to touch on, because I don't think I've talked about on here much, The Secret to Superhuman Strength by Alison Bechdel, which is a graphic memoir, as she does. I was really hesitant to read it because I don't like reading books about people who want me to exercise. I don't want people to preach to me and be like, you know what's just really great, like, go out for a jog. You'll feel so much better.
Endorphins.
Yeah, it's just.
No, just you lift the book, you put the book down.
Yeah, and, I just.
You know, it's resistance training. Yeah.
I just, yeah. So I was just like, oh, I don't know about those. But we had an arc of it, and I was like, okay, I will read it, because I do love everything she's done, and it's just really gorgeous. Like, she tracks her life through different fad exercises that she has kind of obsessed with.
Okay.
And she talks a lot about, like, the secret to superhuman strength. She associates her relationship with exercise to her relationship to gender, because she was very fascinated by, like, Charles Atlas-esque, like, super strong men, and that, like, this was this idea of a body that she idealized as a child without really understanding all of the why.
Right.
And I think it goes, like, up through when, like, 2012, when the Fun Home musical came out. Like, it's her whole life, and it's really a nice experience, because I think many people who have, anyone who's, like, ever identified as a lesbian has a really, there's this strong relationship to Alison Bechdel. Like, really, when I was a kid, there weren't that many lesbian memoirs out there. Like, so she's always been very important to me, and I think it was really nice just seeing this kind of longer view of her life, and obviously touches on the times that Fun Home is about, but also lots of other things and how it has impacted her. So it's a really, really lovely, lovely book. You Better Be Lightning by Andrea Gibson is a book of poetry, again, a one sitting sort of book. I've been reading Andrea Gibson forever. They are a genderqueer poet. They just write some of the most beautiful and devastating queer poetry I have ever, like, there was one poem with this collection, I had, my copy had come into the store, and I was, like, flipping through it, and I gave it to one of our, my fellow genderqueer, non-binary, co-workers, and they started crying at the register. I was like, I'm really sorry to do that to you, I'm sorry I didn't.
There's no crying in bookselling.
It was just, so it's just gorgeous, what their collection that got me, like, interested in them was, is called Pole Dancing to Gospel Hymns.
Amazing.
Yeah. Great so, title. yeah, they've been writing. Yeah, they have lots of collections, so you can definitely go back into their back catalog, and through that time, going from identifying as, like, a cis lesbian to a non-binary person. One of my favorite lines about chosen names, that's theirs, is names are a gift that you can exchange if they don't fit. Of, like, that you don't, it's not disrespectful to choose your own name. It's, you're just,
if it's not within
10
days, you got to bring the receipt.
Or Michael will yell at you. Michael will be like, store credit only.
We're very flexible here. What was that author, the poet's name?
Andrea Gibson. Yep. And then the last one I'll mention is Empire of Pain, the only not queer book on this list. I know, shocking. but again, an author who I will read anything by. This is about the Sackler family, who own Purdue Pharma and produced OxyContin, and, well, not single-handedly responsible for the opioid epidemic, certainly had a very big impact, and the way they chose to market things. And he does a really good job of going really in-depth and taking arguments, because obviously the Sackler family has made statements about this, being like, okay, no, it wasn't really in where he would, like.
Yeah.
He broke down, and he has had a really big impact on their legacy, and they are people who have their names all over the place.
As philanthropists.
As philanthropists.
Right.
They just, the Met just announced, the Met in New York just announced that they're changing the name of their Egyptian wing.
Wow.
Their name has been taken off the Guggenheim, the MoMA, the National Portrait Gallery in London has turned down their money recently. And this has been reporting from a lot of different people, but Patrick Radden Keefe has been, like, if you've watched any movies or, like, the HBO documentary about the Sacklers, he's one of the talking heads because he just knows a lot. And he also wrote Say Nothing about the IRA, which that favorite nonfiction book I've ever read. Just, like, absolutely love it. And it's a thick book, and he just writes really well. So
which one, Say Nothing or
both? I mean, no, but Empire Pain is like
it's huge. It's a real doorstop of a book.
I did listen to it, which I think made it a little easier, but
Say Nothing is still good. Strong performing backlist when you're all the time.
I talk to people all the time, like if they ask me
what's good for nonfiction,
I'm like, Have you
read?
Because I feel like most people think they know about the IRA or like, and then it's so, and he's very good at looking at like the human stories and these giant things. So, so those are the three I wanted to highlight because I don't think I've talked about them on here a lot.
Awesome. I don't think there's anything on my list that I haven't talked about on here. But there are a lot that I haven't talked about recently. We had some similar ones, Marvelous Light, Chosen and the Beautiful, both gorgeous books. Both authors have new books coming out this year.
I've read Siren Queen by Nevo. Yep. Incredible.
Yep. I have the arc for that now, which I'm excited to read.
I want A Restless Truth?
Yes, A Restless Truth is the next one. Which is it? I know it's in the same world, right? Is it a sequel?
Yeah, it's his Robin's sister.
Who's Robin's sister? Okay.
Yeah, it's lesbian Knives Out on a boat is how Freya described it, and that's.
Did you hear there's gonna be a Knives Out 2?
Yes. Oh.
Yes.
Not that we're so promoting. We don't want to promote films on this podcast. We want to promote reading, but
and I just.
Excited. I loved A Marvelous Light. And it's funny because A Marvelous Light was one of those ones that if it hadn't been getting bookseller buzz, I probably wouldn't have picked it up because I don't gravitate towards historical fiction. I don't gravitate towards like heavier fantasies. Like I like to keep it, I try to read quickly. And so I probably wouldn't have picked it up, except you could not stop screaming about it. And then I started to see other booksellers and I was like, okay, wait, hold on. Now I'm curious. And I devoured it. It's incredible.
And literally, one of our coworkers, they sent her a bound manuscript copy and she was like, Joe, this is like gay historical magic. I think it seems like your bag. Like, do you want
this?
Would
you like,
and I'm like, sure.
All right.
Like, it was complete happenstance. Like, I'm sure if I hadn't been working that day, she would have given it to you or Elizabeth or who knows. Like,
So
how does bookseller buzz happen, Ryan? Where do you?
Twitter.
Yeah. It happens a lot on Twitter. I happen to just be mutual Twitter followers with booksellers mostly from New England because we meet at NEBA events and then we become friends.
Right. And then I just am a parasite off of Ryan. I'm just like, I just follow people and they're like, oh, Ryan follows. Okay.
All right. And that's kind of how it happens. I start to see, like, that's how I started to see a few of my bookseller friends all getting really cool arcs from Tor.com. And I was like, I want that. How come we don't have that? And so I said something about...
Tor.com kind of blew up on Twitter and all of a sudden everybody's just...
Yeah. Well, and what was funny was that I tweeted tagging Tor.com being like, hey, how does Gibson's bookstore get to be part of the club?
It was for Chosen and Beautiful. We were all like, oh, excuse me?
And so Irene Gallo, who's like the head of Tor.com, was like, oh, okay, we'll add you to a list. And so she...
And she addresses them often to the cool bookseller club at Gibson's.
Nice.
It's very cute.
Nice.
And Chosen and the Beautiful is, of course, a Tor.com.
Yeah.
But other ones that I really loved, Amari and the Night Brothers is a middle grade novel that I
need to read. Love. That one.
This is whenever I have customers coming in saying, oh, my kid just finished Harry Potter, what should they read? I hand them Amari because I love her. I love her dearly. She is a young black girl who discovers a school of magic, and she goes on a quest to find her brother who went missing and everyone assumed was dead. And he might be, he might not be. She's going to find out. She's going to go on this quest.
It's a middle grade novel, right?
Yeah.
It ends in a brutal murder. Surprise!
Surprise!
It's actually Animal in the end.
Oh, no.
No, it's awesome. It has, like, you know, sort of spy undertones. It's very fun. And it's by B.B. Alston. He's, the sequel's coming out soon. I love it. I love this book.
And
it's so
I don't
good.
Know anyone who's read it who hasn't loved
it's
it.
It's so good.
And kids, too. Like, yeah, kids are it. Really liking it.
Yeah, yeah. No, we've put that in a lot of kids' hands.
Yeah, right, yeah. It's definitely one of, we have, like, a selection of, like,
yeah
Gibson little... recommends, yes. Books that all our kiddos read.
It's, yeah. I also, on the nonfiction front, I really loved The Anthropocene Reviewed by John Green.
I didn't put that on my list because I, like, it's John Green and it,
yeah.
feel,
it
but
feels
it's
like it
so
belongs
good.
To Ryan.
<It's>,
oh, no.
Oh, wait, hang on. No, our listeners
on,
can't hear
Hank's
this,
Fox.
But... but they're squaring off and...
No, Joe was
a
Vlogbrothers fan first.
For Fault in Our Stars, I'm
yeah.
sorry.
Joe was a fan
Don't
first.
Don't apologize.
No, it's I'm kidding, right? Yeah. We love it on Green and I am willing to share, but nobody
yeah.
can doubt my
no
credibility.
At book club, Joe's mom said, hey, Ryan, what do your socks say? And I said, DFTBA, it stands for. She goes, I know what it stands for.
Yeah, she was like, yes, that's what I thought it was. That, yeah, okay. Yeah. Darn
Never
Green's been in my
doubt.
Life for a long time.
No, he's great. And Anthropocene Reviewed is beautiful.
You know what I loved about that book? People would say, boy, Gibson has signed copies.
I know. It's so cute.
And
it's like,
spoiler alert.
They're
all the
signed.
Copies were signed.
It is
that
harder
is the
to find.
John thing.
It is harder to find an unsigned John Green first edition
than
a signed one.
I mean, I remember when he announced he was doing that for the Fault in Our Stars, and it was like
I like watched the live streams of
oh,
him
yeah,
signing
absolutely.
Just thousands, and I was like, man, more power to ya.
Yeah.
All right. But yeah, that's a fantastic book.
And I think it's a really good one for people, even if you are like, ugh, John Green.
Yeah, it is so different.
It's why people love him.
Well, it's
way
him
we
as
do.
An adult.
It's him
it's,
as a
you know,
yeah.
as a person talking to you about and, adult issue, it's not a YA.
Yeah,
you know,
and
yeah.
that's very much like, if you've never watched his videos,
yeah.
you might not see this perspective of him.
Yeah.
He, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like he had
a
big,
point.
Yeah, influence on,
it's,
like, the way
it's
my
Vlogbrothers
mind works.
John Green.
Yeah.
As
and
opposed
like,
to YA author John Green.
And I
yeah,
think people
right.
don't
wide
understand
ranging,
that.
All these different
totally,
topics that
yeah.
he's interested in and is able to write interestingly about.
Beautifully.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the way he ties things in. And, yeah, the essays are gorgeous. And it started as a podcast. And the podcast mm-hmm. is phenomenal as well. But, yeah, so highly, highly recommend that. One that was on a few of our coworkers' lists, Project Hail Mary.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Weir. Loved that one. Had him on the podcast. He was
That's
delightful.
So wild.
I know, right?
You get pushback from some booksellers who say, he's too popular.
No,
it's
I
like,
love
it,
him.
It's like what Yogi Berra was supposed to have said. Nobody goes to that restaurant anymore. It's too popular. You know, it's too crowded.
Yeah,
you know.
No, he's great. He
I
his books
never
are fantastic.
Read him, which I feel like
you would like him.
Again, it's one of those things like it doesn't need my help. And
right.
I'm also
yeah,
not a huge science fiction person. So
yeah.
I'm always just like, okay.
Yeah.
But I do think I would like him. I just haven't
He's
ever...
really good. And
it's not science fiction. It's just what would be your relationship
okay.
with like a sentient pile of bricks, essentially. You know?
yeah.
But not science fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. But
like, very entertaining stuff.
He's great. And he's entertaining and also just stuffing his books with very real, very complicated science, but boiling it down in a way that you're like, oh, yeah, no, that makes sense. And I'm like, I know nothing about science, but I believe you. I loved Project Hail Mary, probably even more than The Martian, and I really loved The Martian.
I felt the same way.
But I feel like Project Hail Mary has, like, a little more heart, I think. And
there's a lot more at stake. Future of humanity.
Give me a 10-second elevator pitch on, like, what is this book about?
He wakes up on a spaceship and he's the only one left and he has to save humanity. And he has to figure out that he has to save humanity because
comes back very slowly.
Yeah, his like short-term memory is like all wonky, and so he is like using context clues to like jog his memory and and maybe also there's an awesome alien that shows up.
Possibly.
But humanity is threatened by an extraterrestrial species, but not the kind you would think of. And, you know, the idea of, like, the main character waking up with memory loss is not new.
No.
You know, like, in fantasy, kids are too young to remember the Chronicles of Amber, probably. That was a plot point in the first one of those. But it's just a brilliant book. And it's very, very good. Just exciting. And like you said, with a lot of heart, very good character development. Yep. And there's a lot at stake.
Very, and I hate this word, but it's unputdownable. I had a hard time putting it down. It was really, really good. Okay. Loved that. And he was a delight on the podcast as well. He was really fun to talk to. I read a lot of horror in 2021.
We're all shocked.
Shocking everyone. there's a novella that I loved, and it is tragically back ordered all the time.
People ask me for horror recommendations. I'm like, oh, is it? No, it's not anymore.
Which one?
It's called Nothing But Blackened Teeth by Cassandra Kaw.
Really, very shockingly good.
Deeply unsettling.
Yeah.
It is.
But it's a novella.
It's a novella. It's a
standalone book, though.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it's a Tor.com.
It is. Yeah.
And it's this group of, I won't even call them friends because half of them are fighting with each other, but they meet up at this mansion that is this like legendary haunted mansion is it Japan? Korea?
I think it's set in Japan.
And you'll have to forgive me, my copy is at home and I haven't read it in a while, but it is this, like, you know, notoriously haunted mansion, and two of the members of this friend group are going to get married this weekend. They're going to get married. They've always wanted to get married in this haunted spot. Great! Nothing will possibly go horribly wrong.
And it's just,
oh my God.
Very uniquely creepy.
Yeah!
Like, in a way,
it is deeply unsettling.
Anyway.
Because they are obsessed with horror, and I don't know, they think it would be cool. I don't know.
So they think it's not a real haunted mansion?
I mean, they're kind of like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we saw a ghost? Like, they're that type of group.
Yeah.
It's haunted.
It's really haunted.
It's haunted.
And the ghosts aren't always, like, friendly like Casper.
And, like, the house itself is...
The house is, like, built on corpses.
Yeah.
It's in the foundation. It is deeply, deeply dark.
Seen that trope before, too.
Yeah. I think it's a real... Like, that is a traditional thing that happened. Like, I think she based it on...
a real haunted marriage?
A real haunted... thing. It is so good, but yeah, it keeps being back ordered. I keep throwing it on the Bookerel in the hopes maybe it'll come back. But really, really good. And then on that line of horror, two of my favorite books of the year came from the same person, Josh Mallerman. friend of the pod.
I thought that name might come up.
Buddy. Best friend. Both Pearl and Goblin came out in 2021. Goblin, of course, book of novellas, telling one story, one night in the very strange city of Goblin, Michigan. I love Goblin. I think it's a great kind of like entry point for people who are intrigued by horror, but they scare easily and they don't want to like be up all night with nightmares. I think it's a good, like, it toes the line. Some of the stories get gory or dark, you know, they're it toes the line without going overboard, which some of his books go overboard, like Pearl, which is my other favorite. But yeah, Goblin is, it's very like Twilight Zone-y kind of, and there's just like something weird about Goblin, and weird things happen there, and scary things happen there, and it's the type of place where people in the Goblin Cemetery are buried standing up to make more room. Because that meant
nothing could go wrong there.
Yeah, no, that definitely doesn't come
back.
It's
just a real estate scheme. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yep. No, it's fantastic. I love it. And then Pearl, the other one, is I just love giving the elevator pitch because it's so absurd. It's about an evil, murderous, telekinetic pig.
What was that last word again?
Pig.
Okay, mm-hmm. That's what I thought.
You heard me right. Pig.
Right. Yeah.
Oink, oink, on a farm.
Babe 3, the sequel.
Pearl had some stuff happen to him when he was a piglet, and his intelligence kind of like wakes up, and he gets smarter and smarter and smarter as he grows, and he realizes at some point that he can make people want to do things, like he can get into their brains. And so Pearl doesn't just make you do bad things. Pearl actually will get in there and make you desire to do the bad thing. And so somehow that's even more terrifying because like it opens with him like making this little kid slaughter one of the other pigs on the farm. Eesh. And it's like a 10-year-old. And when the 10-year-old, like when Pearl like lets him go, that 10-year-old now remembers the feeling of wanting to kill something. That 10-year-old's going to live with that for the rest of his life. That's a lot of therapy for that kid. And Pearl wants to take over the world. He wants to rule humanity. He sits like a human with his weird little pig feet, like, resting on his giant pig belly, and he just, like, surveys the farm. Like, he's so creepy. Ugh. I love him. And it is gruesome. Like, this book, I think by chapter 4, I was describing to my husband some of the things that had happened, and he was, like, turning green. And I was like, yeah, I'm not even into the meat of the book yet. Like, it's brutal.
When your husband
really
starts
good.
Turning green, you keep going?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was part of their wedding vows.
That was...
Oh, wow. Nice.
I will describe to you all of the horror plots. No, it's fantastic. It's totally a slasher, and it's great. It's real good. So, yeah. I'll stop there. That's enough.
Yeah, that reminded me of the telekinetic thing. There was a short story by Lawrence Block, mystery writer, who sometimes would branch out into different types of genre, and this... was more of a horror story. It was called The Boy Who Disappeared Clouds.
Ooh.
And it's all about these people who teach each other this talent of, like, you just stare at a cloud long enough and it disappears. And it's all everything's great until they teach it to this boy with, he's got issues.
Uh-oh.
So
ruh-roh.
It's a short story. I think you can find it in like collected Lawrence Block. It's
cool.
Really good. Yeah, it's old school. I think he wrote it like in 1980s, early 80s.
Nice.
Yeah.
I love a good horror story.
Yeah.
Horror all about
find it.
Yeah. Yep.
You can find it anywhere.
Yep. But yeah, and then, you know, we did post our all of the booksellers favorite books of 2021. It's all over our social media, so you can go check out all of that good stuff, all of those lists. We also have a list on the website that I will link in the show notes with all of them, all the favorite books of 2021. So, yeah, cool.
Everybody had such interesting lists. And it was
They were very different.
Very different. Yeah, and just putting out like one a day was, you know, just great.
That was
a great series.
People were really into it. Yeah.
And especially the people who aren't, who don't post a lot of.
Yeah. Like staff picks.
Staff picks and things.
People were like, oh. Really
like, oh, wait.
Tell us more about your deepest secrets.
I don't know who this person is.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun being able to get some of our coworkers who are more like internet shy. Like they don't really post their staff picks. Yeah. They don't really, you know, they're not really like featured on our social media. But it was like, yeah, they'll give me a few books that they really loved this year. And
yeah,
it was fun to highlight them.
I'm very good friends with Sam. I had no idea she'd read any of those books. I was like, oh, okay.
Sam gave me her list, and I was like, really? She was like, yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
Sam.
Nice.
Cool.
If you need a Linda Ronstadt biography, check out Sam's post.
Check out Sam. Yeah, she reads widely. But yeah, a couple events upcoming. So we obviously have book club, which we mentioned. First Monday of the month at 5:30. Reading Interior Chinatown by Charles Yu. And then we have an event on February 1st at 7. It's a virtual event with John Nichols for a book called Coronavirus Criminals and Pandemic Profiteers. That should be an interesting.
I was looking at that out back.
Yeah, that should be an interesting event.
The title sort of gives you a hint about what it's about.
Yeah. Not real subtle, that one.
Well, he writes for The Nation, I think. He's a really good political writer.
Yeah, that should be a good event. A reminder about our partnership with Libre FM. Our listeners who are new to Libre FM can receive 3 digital audiobooks for the price of 1 credit by using the code LAYDOWN at checkout when they start a new membership. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye! Bye.